Artificial intelligence is a field at the forefront of technological innovation and societal transformation. We're going to look now at the life and contributions of a man known as one of the founding fathers of AI, Professor John McCarthy. He was a visionary who laid the groundwork for the technology revolution that we're witnessing today. He's credited with coining the term artificial intelligence, naming the frontier of research that he helped to pioneer. To talk about the life and work of this Irish-American computer scientist, I'm joined by technology journalist Andy O'Donoghue. Andy, let's begin with Silicon Valley, that epicenter of US tech innovation, and it was the place where McCarthy spent most of his career. How did it develop? Because I think a lot of the technology of California actually started in Southern California and then worked its way up to what we know as Silicon Valley now.
I think that's pretty much it, Miles. And I suppose it's often been said that the gold rush perhaps has something to do even with the state of mind of Northern California. But I think unquestionably it did start in Southern California. And if you look right back to the 20s and the 30s, and the blue skies of California were attractive. And one of the things that started to happen there was the aviation industry. And it was really good for flying. So you had a lot of things that started happening. People were building aircraft there. You had Lockheed and you had Grumman and other companies who were able to test fly aircraft. They were able to build aircraft. And part of what happened, or part of the story then, was that they started to win defense contracts, US Department of Defense contracts. So you're talking about kind of the 30s and the 40s, obviously the war, and then you had the Cold War. And that intensification around Cold War activity, the space race started to happen. So you had all of this kind of this ideal sort of context. And Eisenhower created NASA and DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And that was kind of a trigger, because what happened in Southern California was you needed engineers, you needed mathematicians, you needed scientists, you needed people to support those companies. So you had this defense industry growing up in Southern California, kind of spilled over a bit into Northern California. And I think 1939, Hewlett-Packard, who, you know, we've all had some of their printers or devices in our homes over the years, that was formed, but that was very much
the garage where it all started is still preserved to this day.
It is, and Hewlett-Packard, of course, was the first real Silicon Valley company. But then a big thing happened. Shockley Semiconductor was started in what we now call Silicon Valley, Palo Alto. Sometime later, it didn't last very long as a company, but a group of scientists called the Treacherous Eight spun themselves out, as we would say these days, and founded Fairchild Semiconductor. And that was the real signal for Silicon Valley to start.
And how important in all of this was the presence of the University of Stanford?
Stanford was incredibly important, absolutely crucial to Silicon Valley, because, of course, that's where the scientists, the engineers and the mathematicians were coming from. And, of course, they were close to the companies who were being started. And Stanford very cleverly early on realized academics always love grants, and even to this day. And so they identified the opportunity to get government grants. And I think even up to the 70s, I mean, it was more than 50% of industrial R&D in the US was funded by the government. And it was for, of course, the space race defense work. And an interesting thing happened in 1951, and the Stanford Industrial Park was founded. And they had the head of Stanford at the time was essentially a visionary. And we now know what a business park is. But in 1951, that was a big call to make. And so they took this land, they created a business park. And within a decade, there were dozens of companies, thousands of people working there, all supported by Stanford. And Stanford, to this day, of course, remains incredibly important in the computer business. And we have the founders of Google went there, the founders of lots of other companies. And of course, Hewlett and Packard both attended Stanford also.
Tell us about McCarthy's background and about his parents, because he is very, very, very much an Irish-American.
He is. I often think that he's the greatest Irish-American that we don't really know much about. His father was from Cremahon in County Kerry. And the story goes that he sold a cow or cattle to fund his departure from South Kerry. He moved to the US and he met a woman called Ida Glatt, who was a Lithuanian and a journalist. She is often part of the John McCarthy story. She's often forgotten, but she was a remarkable woman. She was a suffragette. She attended Goucher College. And there's some interesting archive material about her specifically being named. And the head of Goucher College at the time, I believe, wrote asking her and her suffragette colleagues not to protest at the White House. And but 30 of them did. And she was a socialist and she was very active. She would attend, it was said that she would attend within 200 miles. She would attend every conference that she could. She brought justice and social kind of conscience to her circle at Goucher. She married John Patrick McCarthy, or Jack McCarthy, as he was known. John McCarthy, the scientist, was then born in 1927.
And he was, as a child, wasn't in the best of health. And I think, isn't that what prompted the move to the West Coast?
That is, yeah. And he was kind of a sickly child, incredibly clever. He says even that his interest in mathematics started before he was in high school. He then attended Caltech as a student, was a very good student. Even there's an interesting interview that I watched with him some years ago, and he talks about becoming interested in artificial intelligence in 1949. And he attended some computer programming classes before there were computers. So his interest in mathematics spilled over very quickly into computing as soon as it was available.
And just in case people are not impressed with Caltech, Caltech is the California Institute of Technology, and I think it is, and has been for the last number of years, the number one institute of third level learning in the world. So, I mean, it's up there with the Harvards and the Yales and the Stanfords and the Berkeleys of this world. And I mean, tell me about then his education after that, because I think he went back east. He went to Princeton, didn't he?
He did. He had a remarkable education. He attended Caltech, then got his BS in mathematics. He then moved to Princeton, he says, because Princeton was simply the best place for mathematics. And he was very much initially a mathematician, got his PhD in mathematics, was an assistant professor at Stanford for a while, but I think he says that they had three professors and they needed two. So he moved away and he came back, though. Stanford was very much his spiritual home because of all the reasons I think we've talked about and because of the way technology was moving. And so he moved back and would eventually found SAIL, the Stanford Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. And he is credited with coining the phrase artificial intelligence. And up to that point, the study of computers or machines that could think and do things was generally referred to as automata. And he didn't like the term. He liked to think about the future and had done so for years. So he conceived, with a number of colleagues, the Dartmouth Conference, which was held, I think, in 1956.
That's in Dartmouth College.
In Dartmouth College. And he conceived this conference and he wrote to a number of people asking them to attend. He thought that 11 would turn up. As it happened, 20 attended the conference. But he complained a little bit that he had asked the Rockefeller Foundation for funding and they gave him half the money for the conference that he thought they would. But 20 people turned up. And you think, Miles, I mean, it's over 80 years ago or close to 80 years ago that he coined that phrase. And of course, he remains to this day one of perhaps the four people who kind of introduced the concept of artificial intelligence to us.
Is he as important as somebody like Alan Turing, for example, or in a very different area, someone like Oppenheimer?
Yeah, he certainly is an important as Alan Turing. Actually, he received the Turing Award, and as well as the Kyoto Award and a number of others. But he is, and he was very much, I think, there's a number of characters, and they are pillars in a sense. So his work was very much as important as Turing. He was asked about artificial intelligence and when we would have human-level intelligence. And he said it could be hundreds of years. But back in the 80s, he said, however, if I was willing to bet, I would say about 50. And of course, he's not far off. And one of the things he did is he created a number of things. So the Lisp programming language, which is the language that is used for artificial intelligence programming, he conceived that, which was very important. And then he created a type of logic that relates to the number of inputs or the data that we use to make decisions. And he uses an example about a birdcage. If I asked you to build me a birdcage for my bird, you would make the assumption that my bird can fly and you need to put a roof on it. But if you found out that my bird was a penguin, you, and this is the example McCarthy uses, if you found out it's a penguin, you don't need a roof. So this type of logic he thought was incredibly important for artificial intelligence. And of course, many of your listeners will have tried things like ChatGPT over the last year or so. And of course, we now realize what McCarthy was talking about was the prompts that we use. So what he did was he conceived how we contextualize what we tell a computer so that it can make a proper decision based on the data that it receives.
He's also credited with at least accelerating the development of the internet and the cloud.
Well, the cloud, two interesting things. And Stanford, of course, was very important. And the first precursor, I suppose, to the internet was ARPANET. And one of the first nodes, there was four of them. The first one was a connection between Stanford and UCLA, also in California. So it is not surprising that McCarthy was close to that when that was created. But he also came up with this idea of time sharing. And time sharing at the time, because computers were big and they were expensive, and he conceived the idea where over the following decades, we would all have access to information in our homes, we would have it when we wanted it, and that would be achieved by computers being time shared. And so when we look back now, we realize that what McCarthy was actually talking about was the cloud. So in a sense, his concept of time sharing is exactly what the cloud has become.
Something I would have thought would have alarmed, although he preceded him, I suppose, it would have alarmed a namesake of McCarthy, one Joseph McCarthy, was that our McCarthy had an interest in the Soviet Union.
He did. And in fact, he talks about a book, a Russian book, that informed him about a lot of science when he was a boy. And his parents, whilst Ida Glatt was a socialist, his parents really did become communists and atheists. And McCarthy was influenced by not only their kind of, particularly his mother's kind of yearning for social justice, but he was influenced by their politics early on. Although he does appear to have gone full circle and became quite a conservative Republican towards the end of his life. But he did, and he was certainly influenced by their politics in his early life.
I mean, he was probably fortunate that he wasn't that active in the early 50s and was more active later on in the decade. Also fascinated by chess.
He was fascinated by chess. And 1968, he proposed the idea that within 10 years, a computer would be able to beat a grandmaster of chess. And he had a Scottish colleague who in 1978, he challenged this idea to. And his colleague won two games versus the computer's one. So McCarthy says that he was wrong. But when we look back now, he really wasn't that far out.
Did he come into his own? Was he fortunate that he came into his own at the right time, that he was shaped by what was, in retrospect now, a transformative era?
He was absolutely there at the right time. Like many of those people related to artificial intelligence and to computing and the likes of Hewlett and Packard. But I think what's interesting about McCarthy is that he was drawn, in a sense, you know, it sounds trite to say he was drawn to where the action was, but he was absolutely in the right place. We talked about his education from Princeton. He also spent time at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He went to all the right places. What is fascinating about him is that he had the vision and the brilliance and the open-mindedness to realize in 1949 that computing wasn't going to be enough. This was before he had access to a computer. He realized that this was the future. And he worked very hard throughout his life to not only achieve his own academic goals, but also, he gave a lot to the world through his work.
And was he one of those American professors who never retire? They never seem to retire.
He never did retire. He ended up as Professor Emeritus. you know, he worked very hard and he wrote and he became, I suppose we're talking about his politics, he became, some would say, controversial, but he spoke about various topics over the years, from the Middle East to environmentalism, to politics. You know, he had been through that era, and particularly there was a lot of, you know, from the student protests in the 70s, McCarthy worked with a lot of people involved in the computer business, would have a huge influence on them. They were, many of them were his students, but he was also very socially aware of not only California and America, but also the world.
Well, certainly a McCarthy that Irish Americans can be more proud of than his namesake, Joseph McCarthy. That's John McCarthy we're talking about, Professor John McCarthy, an extraordinary thinker whose influence continues to resonate today. And obviously with his Kerry roots, we are going to claim him as one of our own. My guest is technology journalist Andy O'Donoghue. Andy, many thanks indeed for joining us.
Thank you, Miles.
After the break, we'll be staying with artificial intelligence as we hear about an exciting project which is using AI technology to digitise the world's first Irish language newspaper. Stay with us.